there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Welcome to the show and Happy New Year. We made it to 2019. This show will be a little bit different than usual because I am alone, I'm just going to introduce this one show, and then we're going to rerun one of our previous episodes, or at least a discussion from one of those, where we talk about Phantom Thread, a movie that I feel has been overlooked this past year. It is amazing, and it makes you feel very odd things about butter, and it's just beautiful all the way through, and therefore I feel this is something we should try to champion a little bit more. So we're going to rerun that one a little bit later, but we're not going to give you an ordinary episode right now because it's just been way too busy this holiday season, and we needed a little bit of a break, and we're going to prepare for the next couple of episodes. Actually, while we were in Iceland, we did make it to the cinema once, and we got to watch Woman at War, or Kona Feristrith, the new film by Benedikt Erlingsson, which will be released in Denmark around May 2019. But luckily, we caught it up there, and we're preparing to discuss that in our next episode. Also, when we return to our regular schedule, you can look forward to me talking to Tryggvi about Game Night and Deadpool 2, which are both movies that he saw on an airplane, and now I have seen them on an airplane. And I do think that we don't really share the same opinion about these two films. Also, I mean, this is a little bit of a spoiler alert, but I did not really enjoy Deadpool 2 at all. And I just heard some of these best of the year lists, like pick your three best movies. And so many people have mentioned Deadpool 2 as the best movie of 2018, which is ludicrous. Also, this holiday season, I got to watch I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, which was a fun, quirky, black comedy with Elijah Woods. That's a Netflix release right there. Also, Black Mirror, Bandersnatch, a new feature film with you choosing the direction of the story. That was released on Netflix between Christmas and New Year's, and I watched it. I have opinions about it. I'm trying to get Tryggvi to watch it as well, and then maybe we can even talk about that one on a future episode. I guess that is it for me. I don't want to keep you waiting. Now we're going to do what we've never done before. We're going to rerun an episode from May 2018. It was our 43rd, and it is our discussion about Phantom Thread. Enjoy.
I feel as if I've been looking for you for a very long time.
You look beautiful. Very beautiful.
I have things I want to do. Things I simply cannot do without you.
Reynolds has made my dreams come true, and I have given him what he desires most in return. Every piece of me.
That was a clip from the trailer of Phantom Thread, the newest Paul Thomas Anderson movie, and the last movie with Daniel Day-Lewis. Apparently, he retires from acting after this phenomenal role.
Well, maybe he's like a boxer. He comes back and, you know, out of retirement.
One last
performance. Yeah, one last role. Yeah. He's not going to like stay inactive for 20, 30, 40 years. No way.
Don't think so?
Nope.
Maybe it takes too much of a toll on him to do this kind of character acting.
Well, what he does, I'm sure it takes a toll.
Yeah. But maybe it's the only thing he wants to do. Not unlike the actor or the character he's actually playing in this movie, Reynolds Woodcock.
Reynolds Woodcock.
Maker.
That is some name.
Yes. And it's a made-up name, right? But sure. But still, it's based on a true story? Or it's based on a true character?
Really?
Something like that.
Is it?
Well, maybe not. Someone you might know. I don't know.
I don't think
I looked up his name, Reynolds Woodcock, and apparently that's just a fictional character, at least. I just had the feeling that it was based on the, well, some fashion house in Britain. But it might or might not have been. I am not the one to do research, as you all know. That's your department. but yeah, Phantom Threat. It's about the dressmaker Reynolds Woodcock, who is making dresses, and finds a muse that makes him make even more dresses. And I guess the movie is all about Reynolds, his psyche, who is he, and also it's a love story between him and his muse, Alma.
Well, she is a muse in a, well, she's the latest muse in a long line of muses.
Yeah, wouldn't you say? That's what you get. That's the feeling you get. And that's one of the things that I find very fascinating with this movie, is that from the beginning, it sets up this suspense that this relationship might not last, you know, because you're being introduced to his latest muse, or like previous muse, and that's all you see of this muse, because then he goes out and finds another one. Mm-hmm. So throughout the whole movie, you're in suspense whether or not this is going to last, basically.
I think I need another one for this one. Well, you know me. I'm always one for trying new things, and this is another beer. It's canned this time.
Yeah, it's a whole garden.
Well, thank you.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that. But you're always, I mean, you're predictable in that sense, that you have one fancy different beer and then you go back to your whole garden.
And I have found that the canned stuff, it's just the same.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very good.
You just need to pour it in a glass, which Trygve did this time.
Now I'm forced to use a glass and I'm working on my 33%, was it? Thing angle and stuff.
Yeah. I think that's how you should do it.
Yeah,
I don't know, in order to limit the foam.
It looks good. Good head on it. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Good. Anyway.
Oh, that's good. Yes. Anyways. Well. Okay. Reynolds Woodcock. Let's start at the beginning. Yeah. What did you think about that? Well, in my mind, exquisite piano theme.
I love the whole score. I mean, talking about scores and lack thereof, here there's a lot of score, but it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And it's so refreshing having this kind of piano score underneath a movie. A classical score, basically.
The music is just... that piano piece is just amazing, I gotta say.
Yeah.
And it's right there in the beginning, and it kind of sets the mood as well. Mm-hmm. It kind of sets, it places you as well in time, I think. And time and place, really, and class and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect.
Yeah. You know, I was worried starting to watch this. I like Paul Thomas Anderson very much. But I was a bit worried about a movie that was about a dressmaker and fashion and all this kind of stuff that I'm not very much into, But man, I mean, from the beginning, you were just transported to that realm, and mm-hmm. you were in it from the first moment. And yeah, kudos to that. This is the first movie where I actually cared about fashion. Yeah.
Yeah, about fashion, you kind of got to appreciate the craftsmanship and the artistry of it. I agree with you there. But I have to interject a little bit here. Mm-hmm. I just checked out the music. I hadn't done that.
No.
And you may have heard a click on my
yes,
mouse.
It's been clicking away. I'll try
to remember. It's Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that I was am a huge fan of Radiohead's early stuff. Mm-hmm. I haven't, you know how it is when you get older. I haven't followed it, you know. But the bands and OK Computer and mm-hmm. all that just dominated a part of my life.
Yeah.
So I understand
why it resonated.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, it didn't resonate in that sense with me. I just felt like it fit it.
Yeah.
The style and everything, and it worked very well together with the picture. But it didn't touch me in that way.
Yeah.
However, I did feel like the first 5-10 minutes of the movie was beautiful in the way that they set up this whole scene, you know, the House of Woodcock, his character, how he everything revolves around him, how everything is very superficial in some way, and there's a lot of stuff being tucked away and not shown, you know, in their characters. You got all the flash and all the facade, but at one point, within the first 5 minutes, so it's not really a spoiler, you have this tilt of the camera up, so you get a picture up through the house, mm-hmm. and you get the ceiling, which is completely like, well, it looks a bit damaged.
Yeah.
And you have cracks in the walls and stuff like that, just in the corners. But everything is just perfect everywhere else. So it's like this, on the surface, everything is good, but underneath some things are crumbling.
So you took that as okay.
Yeah, I mean, I totally took that as a picture of him, because the whole House of Woodcock, that is basically him, mm-hmm. you know. And then that whole sequence ends with his sister opening the door to a new customer. And she's just having this really like sour face on until she opens the door and she's just like, welcome. And now it's on. And it's just, it was such a beautiful way of introducing all the themes basically of the movie within 5 minutes.
Sure. I agree with that. I agree. The pacing,
and beautiful as well.
The pacing, you know me, I like a good script. Mm. I thought the pacing was excellent.
Yeah.
The whole way through. I'm a little curious, though, as to why the director decided to do this scenes again and again as a kind of a structural device where she's talking to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
In like a lounge chair.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Do you know why? Did you think that was necessary? Because it's for me, it's lost time.
Yeah.
I would have used that time differently. What do you think?
I think it's... I was wondering about that, but I was mainly wondering when in time that happened. And I'm not sure I ever figured out when that actually happened. But at least it kept you a little bit in suspense. It seemed like she knew something that he might not know.
Mm.
You know. So it seemed like she was like one step ahead of him. So it made her more insightful in some way that she was actually talking about the experience with someone else. But yeah, I don't think it was a bad choice. It was something that I was I was wondering while watching the movie, like when is this happening? Who is she talking to? And
in that regard, I think it's quite unnecessary. I look at it as a lost. It's completely. I said it unnecessary, yeah. But I have a beef, mm-hmm. but I'm gonna keep that okay. for a while.
Yes.
Let's just talk about the some of the exquisite stuff on show here.
Yeah.
The detail, the clothes, the set mm-hmm. design. I mean, my wife, she was absolutely. She just loves this film.
Yes.
And she was always commenting on some details, one thing or another, regarding the clothes, regarding mm-hmm. The various aspects of the set design, which was fantastic. I loved your point about the cracks and the corners mm-hmm. and all that. I think that didn't think about that. I think that's great. But it's also funny, didn't you think?
It was very funny.
Really nice details.
Like dry humor.
Yeah, like with the porridge.
Porridge?
Yeah. There was porridge and my wife was like laughing out loud, but probably only one in the theater. But, yeah. but she told me that I was like, I kind of missed this. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it went like this. They were having, he wanted porridge from his cook, and he wanted porridge for everybody, sister, girlfriend. And then he was talking to his sister or something about the porridge, and they were talking, there's cream. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of ended up like him saying, yeah, but it's kind of naughty, isn't it? Cream with porridge? Mm-hmm. And the camera wasn't on him. It was kind of the end of the scene.
Yeah.
It's really, really funny.
Yeah, it's one of those things you need to be there in order to understand.
Yeah, I'm not doing it justice,
but
I know.
But I I remember the scene, and it was this, like, well, it's just not supposed to be funny. Like yeah. that, but it is.
Yeah, kind of.
Mm.
And some of the stuff he said at the breakfast table, which was a staple. It was at one point he said it was like you rode a horse through.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like he was so overdramatic. Yeah, exactly. But it was very noisy.
Yeah.
And she ruined his entire day.
Entire day. It.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those quotes that have stuck with us, you know. Like, it's very unsettling what you're doing. I'm always using it with Ellie now. Like, if she's eating something a little bit too loudly or something.
And she does, you know, that, Ellen. She's always eating something out loud. Oh,
always.
The noise.
No, but you know, you use that now because it was so funny. But it was not meant as a joke in the movie in that way. But it's just such a fun line. The same thing when he's up in the attic and he's being disturbed with a cup of tea. And he didn't ask for a cup of tea. And he's like, yeah, okay, you're leaving now, but the disturbance stays with me. Yes. Like, it's already here. And it's just so melodramatic here.
Yeah. In a funny way, it's a little bit like a comedy of manners at times, but not really, though.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you also understand him. Like, you understand this character, even with all his quirks. And I think that's one of the reasons why I felt like I understood this fashion world as well, because he was so much in it, and you knew how much he poured his own life into all these creations. So I don't know. Yeah.
I mentioned before the pacing, and I always like when scenes get to play out without some green grass editing job.
Yes.
And we have that here. And the dialogue, very sparse and very well selected. And has to be, because you have these great actors. So let's talk about the actors a little bit. Yeah. I mean, first of all, Mr. Lewis, Day Lewis.
Yeah.
What did you think?
What did I think? It was just, it from the beginning when I saw him on screen, like his presence is just so, it just fills up the whole space.
It is. It does. Yeah.
And I think I turned to Elin, even though we were watching it, like, you know, like you shouldn't talk during a movie, but I was just like, he is phenomenal. You know, he didn't have to do much at all. He's just inhabiting this character from the beginning. And I think that's just amazing. Like, yeah, he's just an amazing actor, and he did really well in this movie.
I can imagine how it is to try to act with him in a scene with him, like that fantastic girl from Luxembourg, Vicky Krieps.
Yeah.
She did that at one time when she was trying to make him a meal, a surprise meal. Didn't go quite well, but that scene with they were like arguing. That was like a perfect dialogue, natural scene. there's something about the way Daniel Day-Lewis delivers a line. But he's also very good at like interplay. Like that scene, that was a great scene. When they were arguing. She was fantastic. I love her. She's a find, this one. She kind of steals the show for me a little bit.
She does. She's very, very good.
Yeah.
And matches him perfectly.
Yeah. 27 years his senior, his junior.
Yeah.
But she's something. She will go places, that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, Leslie Manville as his sister. Wow. She's like, that was like a perfect English upper class understated performance, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was very, yeah. I loved her.
When she was putting him in his place.
Yes. But also when she was showing affection a little bit, Ellen and I interpreted her differently, but I felt like it was very hard for her to show real affection, but it seemed like there was a I don't know how I'm going to say, but it just seemed like there was sometimes she like. Wow, this is going really well. I'm sorry.
Use your words. Now.
Yes, I'm trying to use my words. But you know, she was very cold all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But it felt like sometimes she really meant what she was saying, even though she was cold, then there was some affection in her words. Unfortunately, Elin didn't agree with me with these situations, but I felt like I heard something through her words, and that just shows that she was a very good actor here, because there was more layers to it, but she was basically only being cold.
I love that style of the like this understated style.
Mm-hmm.
It really does it for me. She was excellent, I have to say.
You know who I thought should have gotten more recognition?
Can I guess?
Yes.
Can I guess?
You can guess.
Harriet Sansom Harris?
Yes.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yes. BB.
BB Glaser from Frasier.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I could have loved that actress more than I did before I saw this, but now I do.
Yes. I mean, I think that scene, actually, that whole like sequence where she's in the movie, it's probably one of the best succession of scenes. How the wedding invitation is being brought up as a setup, you get to see her come in, and you have a predetermined opinion about her, and then that whole thing changes completely. And I mean, you're kind of just like an emotional wreck after that scene, and you feel so sorry for her, and kind of also for Reynolds and like everybody. And it's such a catalyst for the next part of the movie as well. It's like this turning point. So, I mean,
it really has a role to play, that scene.
Yes, and nobody is talking about that she's in this movie even. Like,
why is that? I mean, that is some performance, because that was the so tragic, the sheer unhappiness of that person just shown through in that short period of time, and it was just genius.
Yes.
Large part down to the actor, I would say.
I really think so, yeah. It could have been exploitative or like so like forced.
And like, made more comic as well.
Yes, also that.
But they avoided that.
And usually you do. Usually you make like, well, there's no hiding or like that she's put up as an evil person in some way, and usually in American films or like many films, those kind of people are just being laughed at,
yeah,
you know, rather than feel something for them, you know, or like try to understand them. And that's what they did here, and that was it was beautiful. It's the one scene that really like stayed with me after the movie.
I have such huge respect for Harriet Sansom Harris now. She is incredible. And what she did with that, I don't know, screen time, 3 minutes or something she got.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it was, but it was a catalyst in the film. The tragedy of her character was unbelievable.
Yes.
And her presence was amazing. I have no words. It was incredible. Why didn't she get nominated for
like
something?
Supporting actor,
yeah,
or something? You know,
wow.
Yeah. But maybe you need to have a certain amount of screen time in order to be considered. But still, I mean, this was just special.
This was no normal performance.
No, it was a very
I was looking so forward to talking about that scene with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
Did it live up to the expectations?
Oh, yeah, it did. Thank you.
That's good.
What about the camera work? I don't know. You're like...
I just really... I can't say much more than I really liked it. There's nothing that really stands out, but that's because everything was just so, like, it just fitted so well to what they were telling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The handheld when he fell down.
Yeah.
That scene.
Yeah. Apparently, Paul Thomas Anderson did the cinematography himself also. So he's been...
That was handheld in that scene, wouldn't you say?
When he fell down?
No, not Steadicam.
Probably some sort of steady stuff.
I don't
know. But it's not that Steadicam feel. No.
Because he was unsettled in that scene. So the handheld really fitted that scene, I thought.
Yeah.
So I was impressed with that. I mean, it's basic stuff, I guess, you know. If you were doing it yourself, you would think, okay, if I want to interpret something with the camera, I would probably do it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
But like you say, no, it fitted.
It's not flashy.
No, not at all.
And like maybe the only flashy thing I can think of, or like one shot, was like a shot behind a car. When they were going out to the summer house or like summer resort,
also in front of the car when they're driving.
Yeah. Like
I thought that was a nice touch, though.
Exactly, it gave it some style.
Mm-hmm.
But it was probably the most flashy stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Also because you know that you have to set it up in a different kind of way. But everything else was just so, like, it was clean. It was precise. Mm. And it worked, you know?
Yeah.
Meticulous, maybe, you would say. Like, kind of like his dresses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't know much about dresses and fashion. But to me, it seemed like they were kind of... They weren't so flashy, the dresses. But they were quality and they were beautiful.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Some of them are really flashy, though. Like that Duchess, Countess type of person with the... There was some flashy stuff there. But still, I know what you mean.
Hmm.
Quality craftsmanship.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
I'm not pretending to know anything about this whole...
No, but you feel like you do after watching this movie, and that's great.
You at least take it seriously as a art/craft, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. So can I go into my beef now?
Didn't you already say something about beefs?
Beef.
Well, anyway, yes.
Well, not that I want to sound too PC here, but I thought I had a problem with it being entirely about him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I thought it was a little bit too male-centric. And it's not just me being a snob for the whole Me Too thing or anything like that.
Yeah.
My wife loved it, had no problem with it. But I just thought, and I was mentioning these scenes, interjection scenes when she's talking in the chair with the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
They were unnecessary to me. But why don't we get a single scene alone with the love interest, with Vicky Krieps? Why don't we get some sense of how she is as a person alone in her room or whatever, any kind of background, really, because it is as much love story as it is about this man and his craft.
Yeah, but it's also about Alma, the love interest.
Yeah, but do you
it's also about his sister.
Do you sure? but she's a supporting character.
Yeah.
I feel it's lacking a little bit there.
Yeah.
I would have used, I was thinking, always efficient, you know, with my time. I was thinking, I would have had some, try to get a little bit to know that character a little bit more instead of doing that unnecessary structural thing.
Yeah. I see where you're getting
it's
at.
It's very male-centric, don't you think?
Not necessarily. No, I mean, yes, it's about Woodcock.
Sure.
and his fashion house. But
and that's okay. I mean, you can make a movie about an all-male movie, and that doesn't matter to me. I'm just saying, this is a love story as well. Yes. We have two. She's on the screen probably as long as he is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we don't get any filling in her character, I feel.
No. No. But you're left guessing a little bit where she comes from, like who she is and.
That doesn't really matter who she is, if she's German or French or whatever. She speaks French to that princess.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have liked to have a few scenes, just some stuff like when she's alone, so we can like see. We don't have any sense of her life without him. I think. We have some scenes where she's picking mushrooms. Yeah. Maybe he filmed those scenes and just cut them. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and you have the scene where she's a waitress. It just seems like she just accepted coming. Like it was like, yeah, I don't know. I never... questioned it, really. I thought it might be a little bit strange that she just up and left everything that she had, but then she did, and I didn't think of it anymore.
I mean, she fights back, but it's like she's not only objectified in her role in the film, but also the film kind of doesn't really. I would have liked to gotten to know her. I really would have.
Yeah,
because
you know, like Reynolds, he objectified her very much she was only amused to him in the beginning.
Absolutely,
and that's actually a like I really like that because you didn't know Reynolds that much. Yet you thought maybe there was some like back and forth between them, something romantic there, but basically it was just her physique, it was her beauty, it was all the outer qualities that he fell for and wanted to do something with.
Yeah.
But then you realize that she had more to her than just beauty. She had opinions, and she shared the same vision in some way as Reynolds Woodcock with like what dresses can be used to, and you know, like something like that. So you got a little bit of a sense of that they shared the same kind of sensibility in some way, but without spelling it out. And I don't know. Like I feel like I got enough information about her and her character.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the film.
I'm thinking the film doesn't suffer for it. I'm just saying I would have done it differently. I think it would have. I think it's a really, really good film. I really liked it. Enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think. If we would have had some kind of a filling in that character. It would have helped make it a little less, you know. You could say, if you're being mean, it's another one of those Daniel Day-Lewis jerk-offs, you know. It's all about him. It's him, his last film, whatever. You could say that.
Yes.
So that would have countered that, I think. Yeah. And this is I was a little bit annoyed with this. So I'm only giving it 4 stars. But like I said, only 4.
But good. Then again, Alma is also, Alma is stealing many of the scenes.
She definitely compliments him.
Yeah.
And we get how strong she is. We get but she kind of only exists in relation to him, whereas he exists on his own, definitely.
Yeah.
You at least know what I'm saying. Do you know? I understand what I'm complaining about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying I would have done it differently. I would have. I think it would have been better. But who am I to say anything about this?
Well, you're entitled as anyone else.
I have a podcast.
Yes. One last thing, though.
Okay.
I will say is I never knew Butter could be that suspenseful.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
It was.
Yeah. It was just brilliant. There's nothing more to say. I won't spoil it. It's the best use of Butter in a movie. And I actually watched the movie called Butter of a person making butter sculptures. That was not good. This is good.
Yeah. I like Butter a lot. And more so after this. Yeah.
But you shouldn't, because too much butter is not good.
Yeah, you can say that about anything.
Apparently, yeah. But
a lot of butter is good.
Yeah, a lot is good, but not too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it depends on you.
So you have anything else?
No, I think I'll leave it at that, also because I feel like my words are leaving me. It's getting a bit too late with our conversation here.
That's my fault.
Yeah. But you know, I gave this movie 4.5 star because of the way it just made me feel. You know? That's when it comes up above 4 stars. It's when it affects me in a way that I can't necessarily describe, but it's just a beautiful, like, whole movie. Like, and it transports me into a world where I don't care about sitting and finding like minute details that are wrong or something.
Yeah.
Like you're just in the movie. This is the kind of movie that really does that to you. And I really love it.
Sure. There's something exquisite about this film, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite happy that I managed to enjoy it so much, even though there was stuff that bothered me a little bit. But sometimes that stuff takes over and really colors your opinion more. But it didn't here, and it shouldn't. No. It's very, 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 very good film.
That was our conversation of Phantom Thread. And I really hope you enjoyed it. It was a pleasure to watch that movie, and it made me feel things that, well, not many movies do, and you should definitely go and watch it. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we are looking so much forward to returning to our regular schedule in 2 weeks. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, all those platforms, just do a search for The Conversation, a Nordic Film Podcast. Also, of course, we have a website, theconversationpodcast.net, and there you can find all our episodes that we have released these past 2.5 years. You can drop us a line over there. There are comment sections under each and every episode. You can also send us a message on Facebook or even tweet us. If you're more inclined to send us an email, please send it to us on contact@theconversationpodcast.net. We might even feature your comment on the show, like we did last time when Jim was having different opinions about a dark place. No, what was that? Bird Box. Anyway, thank you for listening, and enjoy the first part of 2019. See you around.